Texas Parks and Wildlife Podcast, providing an exclusive look into efforts to conserve the wild things and wild places in Texas.
Hello, and welcome to the Texas Parks and Wildlife Podcast. I'm Lydia Saldana with Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation. Today, we're going to be talking about conserving Texas rivers with Tim Birdsong. Tim heads the Aquatic Habitat Conservation Branch and Texas Parks and Wildlife Department's Inland Fisheries Division. Thanks for being with us today, Tim.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Now, before we dive into this topic, let's provide a little background. Some of our listeners may be new to Texas and may not know much about river resources in Texas. Can you share a few fun facts?
Definitely, yeah. So most Texans are familiar with the diverse natural landscapes of the state, from the East Texas pine forest to the plains of the Panhandle to the hill country to the deserts and mountains of West Texas. And our rivers really reflect the characteristics of those landscapes. So we have some really diverse systems. We have about 191,000 miles of creeks and streams and rivers in the state. And those flow through bottomland hardwood forest and in the coastal plains regions and in the eastern portion to these clear spring-fed systems of the hill country to canyons of West Texas and these sandy flowing systems in the southern Great Plains. And so with that diversity comes a diversity in biological resources. So we have high levels of endemism, species that are found in certain rivers or certain regions and nowhere else in the world. And Texas has really high levels of native fish diversity. For example, in the Texas Hill Country, we have 14 species of native fish that are found there and nowhere else in the world. And those are really tied to the unique limestone spring-fed systems that are found in that region. With that diversity comes lots of opportunities for diverse forms of recreation, whether it be tubing or bank wade, kayak fishing, paddling in general. And river recreation has really become popular in Texas, especially over the last 10 years or so, now that kayaks, canoes, other paddle craft are readily sold at stores ranging from Academy to Walmart or everything in between. You can easily obtain paddle craft. We have lots of great places that you can go in the state to paddle and experience the outdoors. Some great places are our Texas paddling trails. We have a network of about 70 paddling trails around the state. We have other areas where anglers can go and access rivers for bank and wade fishing.
Lots of really diverse opportunities.
Yeah.
Well, now, obviously, we've had a lot of rain this year, and rivers seem healthy with lots of water flow. Is that the case? Is it generally true that Texas rivers are healthier the more water that's flowing through them?
Generally, that's true. High flows, flood events, those are key components of what we call a natural flow regime or the various flow patterns that are needed to maintain a river system. And so those periods of low flow conditions are important. Periods of high flow pulses are important. And many of our native species have adapted to that variability. So for many years, they've experienced those drought conditions and flood conditions. They've adapted to that. And these high flow pulses, these big rain events that we've experienced lately, those do things like help connect river floodplains. And there are species like alligator gar, for example, that move out onto those floodplains and lay these sticky adhesive eggs on the underside of plants. And that's part of their life cycle. That's needed. There are lots of other species of minnows that are also adapted. They're floodplain spawning species. There are fish like paddlefish, for example, that make these long spawning migrations during flood events and will congregate around riffles and big rocky shoals and spawn. So, this variability in flows from floods to drought, that's just a natural part of the the cycle of what makes a healthy river system.
And of course, in recent years, drought has threatened Texas rivers, but I'm sure there are other factors threatening the rivers as well. What are those threats?
There are numerous threats, most of which are induced by humans and the changes that we've had on the landscape. So over the last 60 years, that the dam construction has been a significant issue. And in certain rivers of the state, we've seen dramatic changes in flow patterns, those same flow patterns that I referenced earlier that many of our native fishes need to be able to thrive and complete their life cycle. But certain downstream segments below dams have seen alteration of flows up to 90% of the flows that once occurred. But then also groundwater pumping can reduce spring flows and, of course, impact the spring-fed rivers in places like the Hill Country and in West Texas, where the springs make up a significant portion of the base flows in those systems. But any changes to a watershed, changes in land cover, changes in the vegetation along rivers, that can really impact water quality. It can impact the ability to for the land to really soak up that water and continually release it kind of as a sponge back into the river. So we've seen some big changes in base flows, and you know, all these changes can impact our aquatic life. And so you know, there are strategies that are needed to be able to address those sorts of changes in a way that we can continue to see development by humans, and that these landscapes can meet our needs, but we can also do it in a way that's going to help conserve our natural resources.
Well, how specifically is the department, Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, responding to some of these challenges?
Well, specific to river conservation, we've developed this initiative in partnership with the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation. It's called the Conserving Texas Rivers Initiative. And as part of that, we developed a strategic, real aggressive 10-year business plan. And this plan involves developing partnerships with local landowners and watershed alliances, with anglers, paddlers, and other recreational enthusiasts, and try to bring together all these diverse interests to make a positive impact for the health of these river systems.
Now, I understand that you started this initiative with Hill Country Rivers in 2010. Which Hill Country River specifically, and what are some of the things that you're doing on the ground?
So the Llano River was our initial system that we worked in, and we had a close partnership, and that continues with Texas Tech University, the Llano Watershed Alliance, several important landowners that help promote some stewardship practices and a conservation ethic that has now been being shared among numerous landowners up and down that river. But the types of things that we've done through that partnership are river workshops for landowners. Just in these systems that we've been working in since 2010, we've engaged over 1,500 landowners that own roughly 200,000 acres of ranch lands, and we've provided on-site technical guidance on habitat management strategies to benefit rivers to over 123,000 acres of those ranches, and provided some cost-share funding to restore aquifer recharge features and springs and streamside habitats and in-stream habitats. And we've also reintroduced our state fish, Guadalupe bass, to portions of several rivers in the Hill Country. And our work in the Llano has really centered around benefiting the health of that species.
Why specifically the Guadalupe bass? Now, some of our listeners may not know that it's the state fish of Texas, but are there other reasons that you're focusing on this fish?
It's really a good indicator species. It's a keystone species. It's a species that's linked to the natural flow patterns, to functional watersheds, to connectivity in streams, to healthy habitat features, whether it be those cypress roots or boulders or vegetation beds, all of those different components that really make up a pristine, unaltered Hill Country River are the things that Guadalupe bass need to thrive. And so they're really a good representative. They're a good indicator species for the health of a system. And in hill country rivers where we've seen changes from dam construction or water withdrawals or changes in land use around the river, we've seen loss of Guadalupe bass. We've seen extirpation of Guadalupe bass. They're no longer found in those systems. And so they're a good species to hang our hat on because they're representative of the health of those systems, but they also are a prized sport fish. And they're found in the hill country and nowhere else in the world. And so it really appeals to the pride of Texans and our natural heritage. So we did an economic impact study a couple of years ago that looked at stream fishing in the Texas Hill Country, and it was significant. It was roughly $71 million annually, and roughly half of the angling, the anglers that were fishing the region were targeting Guadalupe bass. So we know that there's a strong interest in fishing for this species, but it also is, as I said earlier, a good indicator of the health of these systems. So really the two pieces that we're looking for to build broad-based support from anglers and landowners and other partners.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that there was a business plan created in 2010, and it's 2016, so we're more than halfway through that. How is this program working in the Hill Country?
Well, our initial investments in the Llano River have really helped develop a template, an approach that seems to work well in engaging landowners and other partners to implement this watershed-scale approach to conservation, where we really bring together these diverse partners and we have this coordinated approach where we all identify what the needs are for that system and what needs to occur. And in the case of the Llano, there was a local plan that was assembled by landowners and other partners, and they've been working to implement that plan with technical guidance and planning assistance and some financial incentives provided by the department and some of our funding partners. And we've taken that approach and expanded it now to the Pedernales River watershed and more recently the Blanco River watershed, and continue to work across, our hope is to continue to expand across all of the Hill Country as partnerships are established and as we have those local champions, those local advocates for river conservation that want assistance from TPWD to put these sorts of concepts on the ground.
Okay. Now, you've mentioned landowners several times in the last few minutes, and a lot of folks, especially people new to Texas, may not totally understand the role that private landowners play in the health of our rivers. Can you explain that for us?
I think most people have heard the phrase that conservation begins where the first raindrop falls. And so 95% of the state is privately owned. We have these landscapes that if managed well, are going to contribute positively to the health of rivers and to municipal water supply and to flood abatement and to all of those benefits that the public receives from a healthy functioning watershed and a healthy river. Those rain that falls in the Hill Country, that's helping support recharge of the Edwards Aquifer, for example. That's providing a source of drinking water for numerous municipalities. It's also cutting by managing landscapes in a way that benefits the health of these rivers. We're addressing water quality issues, we're reducing the cost of downstream water treatment. There's so many benefits to city dwellers in Texas from good stewardship of private lands and the impacts that has on water quantity and water quality. Of course, management of those landscapes also contributes positively to fish and wildlife values. And so all of those fish and wildlife-oriented recreation opportunities that we all enjoy, particularly in the Hill Country, if you live along the Austin-San Antonio corridor like I do and many others, we love to visit the Hill Country, we love to paddle and fish, and those systems are healthy and they provide some really outstanding recreation opportunities, all because of the work that private landowners do to help steward those systems.
Now, I also understand that another way you're engaging these landowners is through river access leases that's allowing for greater access to our rivers. Can you give us a little more detail about that?
Sure. So that's a program that's really designed to be a win-win for landowners and for anglers. And for landowners that have riverside properties, they're looking for opportunities to make some extra income, or maybe they just really have an interest in helping promote river conservation in the state. They want to get more people out on the water. They want people to experience rivers and build that desire to help champion the conservation of rivers. And so what we do is make lease payments to landowners. They allow the public to cross their private property to be able to access publicly navigable waterways, rivers where you have the right as a Texan to be able to get out and wade and kayak fish. And at these sites in particular, you're able to bank fish from those private properties. Other areas of the state, you have the right to paddle and fish in the stream bed, but all those vegetated areas along the bank, those are privately owned. And so we have a select number of landowners that have come to us that were willing and excited to offer angler access across their properties. We now have 17 of these in the state, and we've opened up new access to well over 100 miles of rivers. And so it's a great benefit to anglers. There are some really good examples where portions of remote rivers, like the Brazos River, for example, above the city of Waco, there was roughly a 30-mile stretch below Lake Whitney that had very little public access. And we worked with a great partner. It's a landowner that's now established a local nonprofit, the Brazos River Nature Center, with a couple of properties that have opened up roughly 15 miles of access to anglers to some really high-quality fishing for spotted bass, largemouth bass, even striped bass.
That's really awesome. It seems like that's a great example of a plan really coming together. Now, I know that you started this effort in the Hill Country. Will you be expanding into other areas of Texas?
We're beginning to expand into other areas of the state. One area is the Brazos River upstream of Possum Kingdom Reservoir. One of the issues that we've seen impact the health of that river is expansion of invasive salt cedar. It's a non-native plant that grows along stream corridors, and it can really channelize these streams, and it can alter habitat for fish. And because that salt cedar is growing on the stream bank, it's on private land, so it's key that we work with landowners and develop a plan that's really going to attack that problem at a riverscape, at a landscape scale. And so we're already beginning to reach out to landowners, have already identified a number that want to work with us. We're beginning to expand similarly into other rivers throughout the state where we have some specific issue that needs to be addressed that's only going to be addressed if we're able to collaborate with private landowners.
Now, how is this whole program being funded, Tim? I mean, it sounds like a lot of work, a lot of effort, and I'm sure it costs a lot of dollars. How is it being funded?
There are some traditional sources of funding, such as the purchases of fishing licenses in the state. That helps fund our programs within Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. We also leverage those funds against a program called the Sport Fish Restoration Program that hopefully a lot of our listeners are familiar with, but this is a program that is supported through taxes on sport fishing equipment, on boats, on motorboat fuels, and it provides significant funding for Texas Parks and Wildlife Department and other state fish and game agencies around the country to be able to conserve sport fish populations. And so we're leveraging those traditional sources of money against lots of private donations that have been secured through the Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation. And we're also working with the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation and other granting organizations. And then also the state legislature has provided some additional resources for specific programs in recent years. We have a new Texas Farm and Ranch Lands Conservation Program that provides funding to local land trusts to help preserve family-owned ranching lands, so to keep those ranches intact and keep those families on the land rather than subdividing, which often leads to urbanization, and some of the changes on the land that I mentioned earlier can negatively impact rivers. And so lots of diverse pockets of funding, private dollars, public dollars being leveraged to achieve some really big outcomes. So partnerships and diverse pots of funding have been key to the success of this work.
Now, how can interested folks who are listening today, how can they get involved in this effort?
Well, because our funding programs and a lot of the work that we do is supported through things like purchasing a fishing license or purchasing of sport fishing gear, you can get out and recreate. You can get out and go fishing. You can go paddle at one of our Texas paddling trails or other areas that you know to access. And so that indirectly supports this work. But you can directly support the work by getting involved in a Master Naturalist chapter. You can get involved in one of the many fly fishing clubs around the state. We have a Texas Council of the International Federation of Fly Fishers and roughly 20 member clubs that are spread out nearly in every major city around the state. And all of these folks are really involved in aquatic education, angler education, helping build a stewardship ethic within the public and help them understand the value of healthy rivers and what they can do to conserve those rivers. But then they also take on service projects where they'll get involved in river cleanups or habitat improvement projects and work closely with us to put projects on the ground that benefit these rivers.
Now, Tim, I had the pleasure of paddling on the Lana River near Mason with you and some of your colleagues in May, and boy, it was a beautiful day to be on that river. And as I watched you interact with folks, it was very clear to me that this is more than just a job to you.
Well, for sure. I grew up paddling. I grew up fishing rivers and streams and parts of southeast Oklahoma in the Red River drainage and other areas of Texas, and I really grew to enjoy just being outdoors, and I've tried to pass that on to my children, and I have a couple of young sons that spend a whole lot of time on the river with me. I'm definitely growing a couple of river rats, but I see river recreation and outdoor recreation as something that we all need. It's an opportunity to get away from the daily grind and really reconnect with family and friends. And I can remember being out with my grandpa and my uncles, my dad, and just being on these river trips where we're talking about faith and politics and relationships. And I learned so many things about the world from those interactions with my family. And I see paddling and fishing as a really family-friendly, positive thing that brings people together and is a benefit to society.
Well, thank you for being with us today, Tim, and thank you for all that you are doing to conserve our beautiful Texas rivers.
Thank you, Lydia.
Till next time, thanks for listening.
Texas Parks and Wildlife Podcast is brought to you by Texas Parks and Wildlife Foundation, supporting high-impact conservation projects across the state. Find out how you can help at tpwf.org.